Welcome to episode 17 of New Tech People. Today we have Scott McShane, head of digital at Life Without Barriers. Scott, like many Novocastrians, grew up in Newcastle, moved away. We talk about some of the cool projects he's actually working on and also how he's grown into his position. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to episode 17 of New Tech People. Today we have Scott McShane, head of digital at Life Without Barriers. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We've known each other for a while around the Newcastle tech scene, probably back in the days from New Tech startups 4 or 5 years ago now. You've evolved, your career's evolved and jumped forward a couple of steps since then. But maybe for people that don't know you, give us a quick overview of who you are, where you've come from.
I like to think I've evolved. I'm kind of picturing that sort of the monkey growing up kind of thing. But yeah, I grew up in Newcastle. I went through school here, spent the early part of my 20s away working in Sydney, which is a bit of a rite of passage for a Novocastrian, as one knows, working for IAG, doing some tech implementation stuff there. And then I came back after a bit of a gap year to Newcastle and did that again, went for a Sydney lap. And then I think it was from there off to doing some process improvement work for a pretty big aluminium company, which was interesting. A lot of lean practices and those sorts of things, which found their way back into the digital space pretty quickly. And then a little bit of a stint at PricewaterhouseCoopers, which was not my flavor. And then spent quite a lot of the last decade working with NIB Health Funds, helping build their tech arrangement there and helping change the digital, their direct-to-consumer stuff. That was pretty fun. And recently over to Life Without Barriers. So nice. That's a pretty amazing joy.
Yeah, it is. There's definite movement there, and you've ticked the Newcastle to Sydney back to Newcastle box.
A couple of times,
mate. It's so frequent these days, isn't it? So you've done the Newcastle to Sydney back to Newcastle gig. I think it's a pretty rite of passage for most Novocastrians, right? I think this day and age, it tends to be more opportunity in Newcastle. Is your thoughts it's not necessary anymore for people to have to do that Sydney trip?
Yeah, I think so. I think coming, Newcastle Uni and then straight to Sydney is a pretty common path for someone in a tech role or with tech desires. And I think that it doesn't need to be. There's plenty of companies doing pretty amazing stuff here. I think at least as good as what's going on in Sydney. So I think there's lots of ways to develop and lots of way to grow. I think that was maybe a rite of passage because there was a bit of a vacuum, but you can see quite a lot of places. And even companies that are at a scale in Newcastle now that can have big boy toys as well. So big investment that previously just probably would only have existed in Sydney. So I think that's probably one of the drivers of that path initially.
Yeah. Mate, your role is probably one of those roles, right? A head of digital at a company in Newcastle, I would imagine all of probably half a dozen or less of those roles would have existed 5 years ago. Probably a few more now. Not probably a few more, definitely a few more now. And what's a head of digital at Life Without Barriers entail?
So quite a lot of focus on... So we have some capabilities around external facing customer websites. So that's a pretty common digital responsibility. But really it's saying, let's use digital technology to try and... Or let's use technology to try and enable the business to just deliver more value to the customers. And our clients are some of the most sort of vulnerable people in our community. So what we try and do is look for, in my team, look for areas where really quickly we can add a lot of value and chase sort of the root of a problem. So not just the technology, but spending a lot of time with the business and also with clients on figuring out where is that friction and how do we remove it. And it's surprising how fast you can do that when you take a little slice at a time.
Yeah, cool. On those projects, mate, are you able to talk about any of those projects in any detail?
Yeah.
One of the most exciting projects you're working on at the moment.
So we've got a couple of cool ones that we've been working on. One is around attracting more foster carers. So just trying to foster care is a massive problem in Australia. There's kids living in hotel rooms right now because we don't have places to put them with carers. So having that as a motivation, being able to not only try and attract more foster carers, but try and collect some clever data and try and do some things with that to try and make better outcomes for kids in the long term. So what we're trying to do is stitch together our entire customer acquisition process for foster carers and link that with what becomes a good outcome for a child and and then use that as a way to literally change lives. So that's a pretty cool one. It'll be a many-year type initiative, but we've made a pretty good start in that. We also had the NDIS has done amazing things, or quite created quite a lot of disruption in the marketplace. And this is something that we're trying to make sure we can still operate under the NDIS and be profitable. So we've built some apps to try and help make that a little bit easier and carve out a bunch of admin from the business, which has been a really, really cool thing. There's been some other work that is more about just trying to make it easier for those in the front line. So disability support workers who are working with our clients, how can they have a better day and make their day a little bit easier? So there's a few of those things that will be coming out soon, and I'm really, really proud of the guys that have been working on them.
Yeah, nice. And it sounds like, obviously, there's a motivator there for you, right? You're helping some of the most vulnerable people in our society. And also, the people that are working with those people, those roles cannot be easy, and making their life a little bit easier.
It's pretty sweet. And I must say, it's kind of, it's easier to get a job with a big bank in the tech space. And I feel like I'm more, I'm with tech. I'm not necessarily of tech these days, but I think to be able to do that in Newcastle, where I love, but also for a company where I absolutely wholeheartedly believe in their mission and their values, is pretty sweet. So I feel like I found a place that's right for me at the moment.
Nice.
That's good.
So you mentioned there's a couple of those projects are, you know, long term, and I think like most companies, you got a longer term journey. What's on the horizon for, you know, head of digital there, either from a project's perspective, or where do you see, you know, your role there growing?
I think I see, I'm not sure what I see with my role, but I see the responsibility of our team and our portfolio being more involved in helping the business make better decisions, and more involved even earlier on. So I think one of the pet peeves of those working at a technology team is when the business goes, I figured it out, here it is, just build this, just trust me, it's fine. So having conversations where we can get closer and closer to the clients and spend more of the time figuring out what the real problem is, and more of the time facilitating that journey. So discoveries and inceptions that get to the bottom of problems,
yeah,
and then help the business make better choices around what's the right problem to solve right now, and are we sure we want to spend more on that, or are we done? Those kinds of things, which, you know, when something's in, when the train has left the station, it's kind of hard to stop sometimes. And I think part of sort of developing apps and approaching technology in the new world is that you can do little things and you can watch them for a while and determine where you want to put your chips next. So I see our team working more and more upstream and more as a hand-in-hand participant with the business.
Sounds like a good position, right? I think it's a challenge that a lot of tech teams face, right? From being the people that be told this is what we need to build, or go away and do this, to actually becoming proper enabler, proper part of the business, hand in hand together, right?
I think so. And I think it's about relationships too. So on day one, we're only a pretty young team, only about 2 years in for Life Without Barriers, but on day one, we probably wouldn't have been able to start to have those conversations. It was about proving it. But through spending a lot of time with the business, getting a lot of empathy for where the pain is, and doing some things to make some of it go away, I feel like we've generated a little bit of equity there, and we're able to leverage that to participate in it more. And it's less about us being able to do more things, which is a kind of a nice byproduct, but more about us to being able to raise our impact in the business and sort of take what we know we can do and do it scale and do it for more people and generate more valuable for our clients.
Mate, I think it's not saying you're perfect or you've solved the problem by any means, but I think that's a challenge a lot of teams go through. If you don't provide other people any advice on, hey, how to go from a tech team that has been told what to do and seen as a part of the business that just enables to a genuine partner, mate, any advice that you provide on steps you've done to get there?
A bit of humility goes a long way. So spending a lot of time and assuming you don't know anything, but also by the same token, assuming that I think most organizations have isms. So we have LWB isms that are things we know for sure, but when we go and check it, maybe it isn't quite what we know. So both listening, but also asking and being a little bit, I think sometimes you can be a little bit cheeky and go a little bit further just to find the root of a problem, but also following things up and actually, it's fine to say, give me a little bit of space and I promise we'll do something for you. We'll really, really fight for you. But on the other side of it, actually being able to deliver on something nice and early and get a bit of confidence has helped a lot. So small things, deliver early and then keep iterating. It's a pretty good approach so far.
That's right. It's that, over-delivery, right? If you over-deliver on something, build up your equity.
And you have to under-promise so you can over-deliver, though.
Oh, yeah. nice, mate. Well, you're a type of company, right? Not-for-profit?
Yeah.
You sound like a not-for-profit company, but you're tackling things in a very, commercial aspect, right? You're delivering for a customer and a client. You've got budgets. You talk about, business and making money and things like that. What's the biggest misconception with, a not-for-profit versus a commercial?
Well, I mean, it's a not-for-profit. It's not a for loss. And I think so people feel like you should be giving away everything. And I think the goal of a not-for-profit is to try and have some retained earnings so you can build more efficiency into the business and then generate better outcomes for whoever it is you're serving. I think at LWB, we're trying really, really, really hard to do that. In the tech space especially, there's a lot of opportunities for finding efficiency there. So we're a company of over 5,000 employees and more than 20,000 clients. And so 5,000 employees is not a small amount. It'll be closer to 7,000 by the end of the financial year.
Yep.
So we've had some enormous growth there. And this is a company that's only about 20 years young. So a little bit over that, sorry. Probably getting the numbers a bit wrong there. But that's quite a lot of rapid growth over the last 5 years or so. So how do you reconcile that? How do you do that efficiently and still make sure that you're giving clients the right level of safety and support and all of that sort of stuff? So I think we might be getting a little bit off the question, but
no, I think it's on point. I think there'd be a misconception that people would say, "Hey, it's a not-for-profit." They're probably sitting on, from a technology perspective, really old technology. They've probably got a small team, and it wouldn't be one of the places to go. But in fact, it's quite the opposite. Talking to people around Newcastle, the LWB team, the technology team, is actually one of the stronger teams around Newcastle and actually achieving some pretty cool stuff.
I think so. I mean, I'm absolutely guilty of being in there. I don't want to bet one's own back too hard, but I think the reality is that I've just been lucky enough to be able to work with some incredible people. The guys and girls that I work with every day are, you can't tell them this, so hopefully they don't watch it, but they could leave tomorrow and go to Google and work wherever they wanted to. They're incredible. But the way that they see through the problems that LWB has and the way they've been able to solve the problems just amaze me every day. So it's a really lucky situation LWB's found themselves in to have such an incredible team. Like the guys that I work with, they're amazing.
Nice. Yeah, as I said, I think people wouldn't have that understanding without having a little bit of insight into the actual team and the technology that you're using.
I think as well that because it's not a big bank with a big core system and it doesn't have a lot of the legacy technology investment, there's a lot more of a greenfields type attitude. So we've been able to be essentially cloud native in the way we've approached some of the new apps and using some pretty cool tools and things that are pretty enviable, even for those that have a lot more money to spend than we do. So I think that's been a bit of an allure, that some of the constraints that are applied in a financial services context or in a much bigger business, publicly listed company or something like that, don't necessarily apply to us.
Yeah.
So the speed with which we've been able to generate some of this value and some of the low-hanging fruit has been pretty sweet.
Nice, man. Nice. So we're talking strong team, we're talking pretty cool technology and achieving some genuinely good products and things, being able to help your customers. You're the head of digital there, mate. That's no small task. You've obviously done the move before, Newcastle, Sydney, gone around, you've done the PwC part, come back. Now, if you had to give advice on somebody to do those jumps to get to the head of digital, but where's your key advice?
I'm probably more on the business side than the tech side, but being able to ask questions and be sort of empathetic to how that might affect technology and also bring the technologists along for the ride there. I think the secret is business and technology as a partnership and focus on the same problem. So as far as getting into those spots, I think, I've a business background. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. There's plenty of other people that I know that are in similar seats around town that have largely technology backgrounds, and some of them are just incredible, amazing, even mentors for me. So it's been really good. So I think finding good mentors and people who are in the space, and most people will have a coffee with you if you just ask them. So I think that's a pretty good thing. Learn from those experiences and I guess try and find a diverse range of sort of education opportunities as well.
Cool. Let's pull two parts out of that, right? First part, that business part, I think that's a key part. Like as you go up the ranks from a a technology perspective or within technology team, getting those senior positions. And the key really is aligning technology and business, right? And it's not we're just building an app for the sake of an app or using a platform for the sake of a platform. It's like, what are we doing to actually help the business achieve its goals, right? And that seems to be the key differentiator with people that are growing up the chain like yourself and others that are in more technical roles.
Yeah, I mean, I've been told no by CFOs plenty of times, and I think, you know, the tendency to sort of ask for a big chunk of work, and people are worried because they spend a lot of money. I think if you can find ways to write smaller business cases and say, just give us enough space to try this and show some value nice and early. And this is one of my main sort of messages, is like less is more and deliver early and measure the crap out of it. And then you should have data that you can have an intelligent conversation about. I think when you go for something too big, the stress is you're forcing the stress up onto those that have to write the checks. So, from a business point of view, it's to say to have a tendency to do less, ask for less money, but deliver more value earlier. Then you had this sort of weighted shortest job first. So if you can get those small things to deliver value now, then you're collecting the dividends of that while you're doing other work. Whereas if you have a big chunk of work and you ask for too much money and you're committed to the end of it, then you don't necessarily have a payback. And if you do, it's so far out in the future that it makes the business case a lot harder to get up.
It's like that agile versus waterfall, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think less is more and measure the crap out of it.
Yeah. that'll be the soundbite, great.
That'll be the quote of today. Yeah. Mate, the other part you mentioned just before is the education piece. Mate, I think there's differing views out there on education, on for technology professionals in particular. And what's your view? You obviously come from a business background, but what's your view on formal education as a stepping stone or a part of a career?
I just finished an MBA, and that was a fun exercise to do whilst having a 1-year-old. So I don't recommend that to anyone, but I do recommend doing an MBA at the Newcastle University was a great experience for me. And I think more the network there, as far as do I take that into consideration significantly when I'm hiring people? I don't know if it matters as much to me as I think it did. I think, especially in technical roles, I think some of the engineering school type things are quite good. The way people unpack problems, there's some great great lessons in that. But I think that the universities have a challenge at the moment in trying to be able to pump out grads that are relevant because the technology space moves so fast. So I've seen some pretty good 10x developers come through and not necessarily leverage too much of the learnings from university, but more in the real world type learnings.
Yep.
So I think if I had to choose between someone who was a freshy grad at the top of their class versus someone who was just really, really keen and loved to tinker and was a fast learner, I think I'd probably go for the latter. But I mean, it's quite often you end up using degrees and things like that to sort CVs anyway.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing it. Yeah.
That is part of the role. I completely agree. I think there's definitely a place for it, and there's some really solid principles that university degrees can teach if other people don't have. But I think the key part that you mentioned there was that, you know, the fast learner, the person's got a bit of a desire around it. I think when you're looking to hire people, if you can hire someone who's actually passionate about what they do, they're building something in their own time, they're tinkering, they're the people that are going to pick up a new language very quickly or be inclined to sort of learn.
I think so. And just you've got to be careful with the whole hire for the team dynamic thing, because that can be, making an accidental fraternity. And that's I'm really, really against. I really think that, you know, diversity of ideas is sort of the source of what we've been able to try and get good outcomes from. But, I don't think formal education in the technical space, I guess it kind of depends on how close you are to the coal face, really. But the biggest challenge is just how fast things are moving, and the challenge is more for the universities on how do they maintain relevance in that world.
I've had a chat with Anthony from the uni as well, he's on top of that definitely more than you and I. They're looking at, you know, breaking university courses down into smaller parts and looking how you can integrate, you know, other external providers into that to put something most relevant as the times change. So On that point, you also mentioned outside of, you know, formal education, other parts of learning, is there any things you've used? You've done an MBA, but other external providers or any training you've done outside of formal education that you've found valuable?
I quite like, every couple of years going to a conference or a different conference. I think they can be an interesting way to start your thoughts on things. I think quite a lot of, trawling Twitter and looking for people who are appropriate to sort of figure out who they're following and what they're learning and what they're sharing. Yeah, I think that there's just conversations with people who you respect and who are knowledgeable on something and seeing what they're happy to share. That's been one of the easiest ways that I've found to sort of develop my learning.
I don't think you find too many people are a totally closed book these days. More and more people are willing to share, their insights.
Yeah. At some point, you've got to do the work. There's not that much sort of IP that's secret these days. It's still just how you do your work.
To execute, right? Like, there's a big thing around the startup world, right? Ideas worth shit. It's whether you execute on it. That's a differentiator. And people that are actually willing to execute are far fewer than people with, great ideas. Great in inverted commas. I completely agree. I think that's the way of the future. I think good quality information is nearly free these days. It's so readily available anywhere, and that's without even having a conversation. It's been there, done that.
It's figuring out what's the right information for you, and can you apply it? And if not, can you figure out who can?
Yeah.
It's like what kind of expert do you hire these days? There's a lot of what's in there, and it's sometimes a bit of trial and error as well.
You mentioned Twitter before. Follow a few people there. Is there any people in particular you would recommend either on Twitter or elsewhere that people should follow for advice?
So Simon Wardley, who does the Wardley Maps thing, and Rachel Murphy from Different are both pretty cool thought leaders that interest me at the moment. And I don't think they've really shared anything bad over the last few weeks. So
nice.
Yeah, go there.
What are those, mate? They're unknown to me.
So Different is a consultancy, kind of like it's innovation / development consultancy, and they've done some pretty cool contributions. So
nice.
Sort of worth. She's the, I think, the CEO.
Yeah.
And Simon Wardley does this cool kind of business mapping type technique, and that's kind of his main trick. But he also has a pretty good contribution to the Twitter sphere and the technical space as well. So I'm finding them interesting at the moment. It's worth checking out.
I definitely might go down the Simon route, I think.
Yeah.
I'll give them both a crack anyway and have a look. And it's interesting. I think, as you said, finding other people that are knowledgeable in their space, finding out who they learn from.
Yeah.
You dig a little bit of that. Not everything that you love, I'll love, and vice versa. But if you give things a crack, I think you can do enough scratching of the surface, you'll find the things that, that you find valuable, right?
Yeah.
Nice. Mate, outside of the education part, your role is obviously a busy one. What do you do from a productivity perspective to keep yourself on target each day, whether it be apps, whether it be routine-based? Are there any things that you'd recommend or that you've found successful?
So I use Trello pretty religiously to manage my own the sections of my mind. I tend to break it up, one for the things that I can be doing for my team, one for the work that the team and I are doing to work on, and another one just more me generally, how to organize my tasks. Something that I want to be better at, I know that's one of my sort of development areas, but how do I get better yield out of my time? It's definitely something I'm focused on. I use that. I think I also used MindNode, which is a mind mapping tool. Thank you, Glenn Thomas, for that one. It's amazing, and it's good for getting your ideas up on a wall. It's worthwhile.
That's mind map.
MindNode, I think it's called. It's just a mind mapping tool, but it's super. Yeah. It's pretty elegant. It's nice.
Elegant's nice.
Yeah,
that's the beauty of it, right? A lot of these apps these days, it's taking a core concept. It's probably been around forever, making it look nice, make it elegant, easy to use, and there's value in that, right?
I think so. I think just being able to chunk up your mind into dedicated chunks and make that the problem for an app, and then you can kind of be a little bit more free thinking. It's good.
Yeah.
The bad thing is if it's not in my calendar. So my wife and I share a calendar, and if it's not in there, on occasion I might miss an appointment. So I do need to remember some things myself, but I'm getting a little bit too reliant on technology for that stuff.
I am the same. I think, hey, there are parts of the technology, you might as well use it, right? It's there and it can make your life more efficient. You probably get in trouble for less missing of meetings and important events like family stuff if you're keeping that in there, right?
I think so.
It's always good to keep in the good books at home.
Yeah.
That's good. Mate, any other apps? Any other apps in general that you're using, you know, on a daily basis?
Not as much time as I used to looking for new and novel apps. So I feel like I've kind of consolidated back to a list of things. I use analytics and reporting type apps most days just to keep track of things. And that's where I spend the majority of my sort of discovery type time. What else is in the mix? Oh, real-time board. It's amazing. I'm sure there's heaps of people using this at the moment, but it's this kind of amazing space where you can be in there with multiple people kind of all building out this. You can have different shapes and things. It's amazing. Go and check it out. It's really kind of abstract because it's also process mapping, but it's storyboarding or story mapping, but it's collective minutes after a meeting or anything. It's really, really cool. Check it out.
Nice.
Real-time board.
I like this.
Yeah.
I'm going to say real-time board. That's a key take right here. I'm going to check it out for sure.
Yeah, do it.
I'm a big fan. Hey, I'm probably similar to yourself from perspective of, I think you check out a lot of, you go through a phase where you check out a lot of different apps. You look for what's new, and then you just consolidate, right? It's just your phone can get overloaded or your process get overloaded, but so much on, it's just like, okay, let's rip this all back, and you get back to a core couple of things that work and work for you.
Yeah.
And that's where, hey, if you add one new thing here or there, it can work, but it's like consolidation, right?
I think so. I mean, I'm still a nerd for that sort of stuff. I love seeing what's new.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's been a while since I've had the experience you have when you first saw Shazam being used.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had that kind of that meme with the three phases. I was definitely the third or the fourth quadrant in that when I saw Shazam. I haven't had those moments for a while. So I feel like that sort of stuff, those sort of that's a cool use case.
Yeah.
Moments have dried up a little bit over the last couple of years. So
yeah, it'd probably be when that. Oh, this is my guess.
Yeah, no. Tell me.
Extremely uneducated guess. I would say that, you know, the next phase of that is probably going to be something, you know, VR related or AR related, right? Also, you know, the Pokemon Go came and was massive for a hot minute there.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the next phase, right?
They're getting more and more niche, though, aren't they? So this idea that everyone has had that moment where they're like, what is that song?
Yeah.
I need to know that. And then to be able to know it and to know it over the noise in a crowded bar. Yeah,
that's phenomenal.
There was an amazing experience. I feel like these experiences that are getting more and more niche and platforms are getting more and more niche. I'm curious to see what the next oh my God moment is.
Yeah, I think you're right. That niche story, right? Like, people are doing well, are really doing it. You nail one problem, right? You're not trying to nail it for everyone. Like, that nailed one problem and it nailed it really well.
Yeah, it's difficult to do another Uber now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But somebody will do something like that, right?
And
that's why they will be billionaires.
Yeah.
That's cool. Any ideas that you've got in around that front?
No, I wish. If anyone's got one, let's work on it.
Yeah, cool. Outside of them, day-to-day. You know, tech life, life without barriers life. Are you a tinkerer? Are you a guy that plays with technology or is it more?
I am. I like to break things and then not fix them. I think it's more finding out how things work. Ever since I was a kid, pulling a VCR apart that was our family VCR and having to apologize for it. But VCRs was where cassettes go in for the kids. But
I had a good Ninja Turtles one, I think.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. That's how you know you've made it.
My kids are now into Ninja Turtles. It's phenomenal. I get to watch that at home. I'm like, this is great.
Actually, you know what I really love? I love doing woodwork stuff and building things around the house now. That's my thing. So making things in my hands. And I think maybe that's a byproduct of spending so much time working in a world where the synthesis of what is created is digital. It's kind of nice to do something and spend a whole day making a step. That actually happened.
Yeah.
Single step.
I would like to say I've one day made a step, and it's not the case.
I'm sure you can step up.
I'm the least handyman that there is.
Don't worry, we'll get you a hammer or something, mate. It's good.
Actually, I'm starting to, I think I'll be looking for a sponsorship from Ryobi soon. I've started to acquire, I think I'm up to 4 Ryobi tools.
They're a gateway drug, those things.
Well, they've got good marketing, that bright green packaging. I think I've got 4 or 5 tools now, so the shed's starting to fill out.
Yep, bangs every Saturday.
Mate, I don't think you'd be the first person I've heard that likes to, you know, build things on the weekends, and technology folk that try to escape technology. It can be all consuming, right? And if you get away with that, get in the garden or start to build something, it can be a good break.
I think it's just there's a bit of a drive back towards lots of real stuff. I mean, I like going to the farmers markets, and that was another thing I thought that 5 years ago would be my thing, but now simple stuff like that, or you know, working in the yard, or trying to mow a lawn and not have weeds in it. Five years ago, Scott, if I could have said, hey, mate, trust me, you're going to love maintaining a lawn and you're going to love pulling weeds out of that thing, oh, my God, he would have been so embarrassed. I love that now.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell you've had a kid when that's a thing, can't you?
Oh, yeah, sometime. Yeah, I don't disagree. There's a lot of things in that category for myself. Mate, you just mentioned something there, like, you know, that guy back to the motivations back to nature and that type of thing. You and I had spoken before about motivations, why, how you work life without barriers. You know, there's a good story there and feel good about that. You and I have also discussed about recruitment and building teams like that. I think there's a big challenge these days with, you know, companies having that story to tell, and why should somebody come work there? There has to be that sort of intrinsic motivation. Mm. And, you know, what you're building's, you know, helping somebody or doing something exciting. Mate, what's your thoughts around that?
Yeah, Dan Pink has this bit on motivation that's sort of overquoted, and I probably won't do it very good justice. But it's talking about autonomy, mastery, and purpose. I think, you know, if you can kind of lock those up, and you can pay people enough that they don't have to worry about money, then I think most people in tech get taken fairly good care of. So then what else do you have? And so I think, you know, if you can talk about why, and you can tell draw the connection between why the organization is doing important things, and I feel like I'm lucky enough to work in an organization who's doing great things for people who need advocates. Constantly focus on how are we connected to that value, how are we connected to those clients, and think about that a lot, and make sure that the connection is strong, and talk about it a lot. Then I think that's one of the from a recruiting good people point of view, trying to figure out how those stories and how those things connect to us is a really important thing for people who are leading in tech spaces.
I agree. And you're building your team, obviously, in Newcastle. You grew up here, moved away, come back. And what's your thoughts on the current tech scene in Newcastle?
I think it's pretty strong. I think there's so many cool things going on. There's a startup scene that didn't exist a few years ago. There's guys like the guys at NIB and some really exciting things going on at the Greater that are pretty exciting. There's some smaller agencies that have got some great talent and making massive contributions to some of the bigger companies as well. It's pretty amazing to stand back and see that. I think that obviously the contractor market is borderline non-existent, so that's interesting. There's some things that are close to Sydney but far away. Yeah. And I think the depth of talent is probably where it comes up sometimes. So trying to access great people that are going to be good for your culture and good for the work environment, and you know, great contributors is hard. So I think that's something that organizations need to figure out a way to work against that.
I completely agree. I think there's some really strong talent. I think the lack of depth is the problem at the moment, and it'll be a challenge ongoing. The challenge as that pool becomes more and more shallow because there are more and more companies, both new companies coming to the area, but also companies that are expanding their teams and building their teams. As you said, your team was only created 2 years ago and you've got a pretty significantly sized team now, right? Those people were diversified elsewhere in the past, and you've got more and more companies fighting for that same talent pool, and we're not bringing in enough people quick enough.
Yeah, and maybe it's just an artifact of, you know, it's a lot of this stuff is actually quite hard to do. So they're just not necessarily a lot of them. And when half of them work at CommBank, you know, it's kind of hard to you're sort of fighting over who's left. So I think it's a tough challenge for the technology space. But I think it's also it's a worthwhile one for businesses to take on, because most problems have some connection to technology now. In businesses, from small to big. So figuring out, you know, what's the right investment for us, and how do you make sure we're getting the right returns, is one of the main areas of focus.
Oh, definitely. As you said, mate, well, I think that's one of the challenges. Not only new businesses come to the area, but traditional businesses who've never had technology teams starting to build out pretty significant size technology teams, because it's a genuine part of the business to enable them.
Even
to get
smaller businesses are saying, well, we're going to take a high-tech kind of route, but we're going to stitch together things ourselves. We're going to use like If This Then That or other tools like that enable them to build away efficiency. So there's some amazing, I think it's growth-wise, do some incredible stuff by stitching together a bunch of their own their own tools, and they kill admin all day long. That's their whole thing. So
I love Growth Plus.
Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah,
I'll plug them. Yeah. Sure. Not only as an accounting firm, but as like an actual business consultancy firm, I think the team there are phenomenal.
Yeah.
You just discussed that, you know, probably one of the biggest challenges for Newcastle is that lack of depth in the talent pool. Like, where do you see Newcastle going over the next, let's call it, 5 years?
I'm so excited about it. I think we caught up at DevOps days, and I think that those kinds of moments and the guys that contributed into that, a bunch of which have been in the earlier less than 17 episodes, have been amazing in helping develop that. There's some, I think some of the investments from the university will help that. I think it would be lovely to see a big technology company come and have a presence in Newcastle. I think that can help. I think some of the stuff that the guys at I2N are doing around helping facilitate innovation is a really good driver of that sort of stuff. So I'm super optimistic about it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as people get priced out of Sydney, that helps us too. There's a sort of a natural kind of move towards a bit of a sea change, which is quite nice. I think Newcastle and the technology space in Newcastle is bright, and I'm excited to be part of it, and to be working with such great people that sort of inspire you.
Yeah, nice, man. Yeah, I think the community, you know, you know a lot of those people around the community, and it's good that you are a good networker and have those relevant conversations with people around town and see what other people are working on. People want to get in contact with you. If they like what you hear, or they're like, hey, how do I get to a head of digital type role?
Yeah.
Mate, how people get in contact?
Twitter and LinkedIn are both fine. Yeah. More than happy to have a coffee with someone who's interested.
Cool. Thanks, mate. Thank you for coming on.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
For all the show notes, including all the links we discussed in today's episode, please visit newitechpeople.com.au. Hope you tune in next time.